You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of January 22nd, 2020, and these are your hosts, Podcast Men.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorless conversation about video games and the gamiest game.
The gamiest game of 2019. We're finally talking about it. Months in the making.
Finally coming back to discuss Death Stranding, Hideo Kojima's latest masterpiece, which is, I believe, what we called it.
I believe my direct quote was, this game is a masterpiece.
This won numerous of our Gamies Awards, including
and
the Gamiest
Game of the Year. Oh, this is unprecedented. Is it unprecedented that it won Gamiest Game and it was our top game?
I think that's extremely rare because, I mean, honestly, most of my favorite games are not gamey.
Yeah. You
know? They're subtle about it or whatever. I mean, Red Dead, I think, has been up there and stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like, maybe Breath of the Wild. I forget if that one gamiest game.
Was Metal Gear Solid 5 your game of the year? The year
it
that
was,
one
but it wasn't
gamiest?
A sweep. Okay. It wasn't yours, too.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, the gaming meter we need to sort of take another look at. We are finally going to do a full deep dive into Death Stranding. We'll talk a little bit per normal in a non-spoilery way, but I think we'll get to spoilers pretty quick. Yeah. One, because this game is super dense and there's a lot to talk about. And two, we already kind of talked about Death Stranding a little bit in our Game of the Year podcast and the Gamies podcast. So yep. If you want to hear some more thoughts, those are two good episodes you can pull up in wherever you're listening to this, find, and give those another listen.
Yep.
Without further ado, Scott, where does one even begin? Because I'm tempted to go through it chronologically,
uh-huh.
But it's not really a chronological. I mean, it is chronological in some ways, but
yeah.
Sometimes I kind of want to. Maybe it makes more sense to jump around by theme. I don't know. What do you think?
I think themes make sense, and I think there's enough to talk about, even from because I actually think that this game's mechanics are pretty resonant with its theme that it's going for.
Yep.
And so I think it's pretty. I mean, I think just one theme that I think can lead us into the mechanics straight off the bat is struggle.
Yeah.
Like what struggle means in this game from a moment to moment perspective, from a relationship perspective, from a practical physical perspective, from an emotional perspective. Like, I mean, I feel like this game, I mean, the struggle is real with this game.
There are certain pieces of entertainment or quotes that I really like to think about because they understand the way that things take work, you know, like the way that Amy Adams talks about acting. She always talks about it as a form of labor, which I really appreciate because we so often think about celebrities as these like, oh, they're like such natural, good acting talents. And it's like, no, motherfucker, it's a job. Like, it takes practice. I do work, you know, or the way that we think about, you know, relationships, for example, as you said, right? Like when people talk about, oh man, how did people stay together for so long? Or how, you know, what's the heart of a good relationship or a long lasting marriage? It's like, look, you know, there's not really a sort of happy, easy way to go about this, but like shit takes work, you know, you put an effort, you wake up every day. Or I actually just watched a movie today. I watched A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which was about Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's even an element in that film where it's like, look, to be a good person means to do good things every fucking day. And it takes time and effort, you know? It's not something super easy. I think that is very much at the heart of the entire game, you know? Because I think this game is about, this is wild, because I early on in the game, I was not aware that it was about all of these things, but it's about the internet. It's about friendship. Yep. It's about loss. It's about being a parent. It's about climate change in a big way. Yep. And at the heart, I think, of all of those stories is it takes a lot of human effort to make the world a better place, but it's worth that effort, you know? Like, if there's any one takeaway, it's like, look, we got to put in work, you know? You got to commit to it.
Yes, yes. There is effort behind every single action, whether it is governing a nation or walking up a hill.
Yes.
And also there's just, I mean, I think one of the interesting things about this game is that while Sam does effectively have superpowers in a meta sense because he can't be killed, he doesn't really have superpowers from like a moment to moment perspective. You know, he's not flying, he's not super strong, whatever. And this game is about the grind, like the grind of what it takes to get something done. And usually we celebrate heroics, but most of the time what gets things done in the real world, either on a macro or micro sense, is just people willing to grind. And I think that there's a lot of that in this game, even to the point of most of the game is surveying the physical territory and finding a route around it that won't make you fall.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like, there's nothing really heroic about that. You're just putting one foot in front of the other until you accomplish what you've set out to do.
And the notion of a collective grind, you know, like the idea that if you drop gear, someone else on the internet can find it and carry it. And they're rewarded for carrying it even just a little bit of the way, you know, because because helping someone doesn't necessarily mean you're carrying the whole burden. But it means that you take whatever time you can and help in little ways. But collectively, that work we put together is what accomplishes things. You know, the very idea that if you really want to effectively build your world and contribute towards the roads, for example, because eventually you can collect resources and start building roads. And some of those roads take a lot of effort and people will ask for help to build them. And you all go in on it together. That's not really a main quest. You know, there's never a moment where it's like, bridges, go build X number of roads. Like, you do it because, one, it's helpful for you, but you also know you're contributing towards that shared whole, you know? And I certainly found myself spending a lot of my time going out of the way to contribute because it felt really good to contribute. It just feels good to feel like you are adding and putting in the work. You are choosing to intentionally avoid the main side quests, your main goals, in order to help the whole. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and there's a, to your point, there's a certain amount of faith that it takes because it's not a required thing. It's not even, I mean, it's, they bring your attention to it mechanically, but then they just kind of leave it alone. And so you're hoping, well, I'm putting all these resources in and it's not going to really make a difference unless many people are doing it. So I have to go out on faith and try to convince people, you know, I'll leave a sign here. I'll do some funny things to try to get people's attention. But ultimately I'm banking on the fact that everyone's collective will make this turn out well, but it completely fails if no one does it. So we all have to, it's like some weird prisoner's dilemma type of thing. So it's like, we all have to do it or else it won't work. And what we're all doing is a very banal thing that adds up to something amazing.
And I love that as you like and show your gratitude, it builds stronger connections between other players, you know, like that's fucking wild. Which in turn, you know, you find yourself wanting to make connections with people who also want to make connections, you know, like you work and collect and build things together. I'm sure there's some free rider issue. I'm sure someone has played through this game, not building anything, you know, and contributing at all to a road. But they probably don't get very many likes. You know, they certainly don't. They don't get to feel that sense of inclusive community building that, as a Strand game, I think Death Stranding accomplishes.
I mean, I will say, just to like round out the moment to moment mechanics, I mean, obviously highly fiddly. I mean, half the time you're trying to, you have to remember to like press the shoulder buttons correctly so you don't fall over. You have to remember to look at a slope before you walk down or else you'll trip and fall or you'll accidentally submerge some precious cargo or something. But I mean, that this game is we talk a lot about walking simulators, and I think from a mainstream perspective, this is the closest I've ever played to like a hiking simulator.
Yeah, I was gonna say I never walk with that much level of concentration.
Well, I was thinking about it because especially when Sam, when my Sam,
yes, your was, Sam Bridges
was smaller, I used to have him in the backpack a lot, and so and that backpack's heavy. I mean, once once you like put everything on, that's like, you know, it's like close to 40 pounds that you're like kind of lugging around.
Sure.
And there was a time where we were hiking around and we were camping or something. And it was like, man, this would be treacherous even when I didn't have a baby on my back. But now I'm like triple checking my footing, looking at every rock, making sure I'm not like putting my foot sideways to like topple myself over. And there's just a certain tactile, there's a certain tactile mechanical feel to doing challenging walking that you very rarely get in video games. And this is one of the few ones that you get it.
Yeah. And I love the sense of, I mean, it sounds dumb, but the sense of like minor accomplishment. You know,
yes.
Like when you, I mean, I think it's a big accomplishment when you finish a road or when you get through a BT infested area. But man, there are moments when you're just like, I found an efficient route and it just feels good. You know, it just, it really, I don't know. I mean, sometimes I wonder if I'm succumbing to the sort of the base positive reinforcement that video games provide, you know, even something like Cow Clicker can feel satisfying.
Yes.
But I like that. The game seems aware enough to fit that into those larger themes where, like, you know, sometimes have those minor accomplishments are minor, but they contribute towards a larger goal, you know?
And yes.
That can feel good as well.
I mean, this just mechanically, this game is full of, I mean, there's a lot of emergent gameplay that comes out of it. And I think there was, I talked about one thing in my, in the game of the year where it was like the lowest lows were when I was under equipped and ill prepared for a long trek and found myself making like very little progress and then had to rest again and just like really feeling like you're stuck out in the wilderness. But then there were some moments where I was blasting across the field on a motorcycle. I was being chased by all of the, you know, the, what do they call them? The people that have just gotten obsessed with packages.
The mules.
The mules, yeah. Mules. Just running away from a gang of them blasting and then seeing a canyon. And I was like, well, I can't
go
left or right.
Time to jump this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so you just punch it and then you hit the ramp and there were times when I hit the ramp and it looked amazing, just a completely amazing, you know, badass emergent moment. And then there was times where I hit the ramp wrong and fell into a canyon. And then it was like, fuck.
I mean, we've probably been in the same canyon. Yeah. Canyon. Yeah.
And like, you're trying to like scramble and put your backpack back together after fucking eating it down a canyon.
Yeah. Or even the sense of zip lines when you're setting them up and you're like finding the little, you know, the right way. I don't know if you've ever accidentally like gotten off halfway through a zip line, but like, that could be traumatizing. Man, I had one particular zip line route I was just so proud of. Like, I could zoom all the way from like mama's location into deep into the mountains, and
man that's good.
And I mean, the whole ride, no joke, the whole ride was probably like 8 minutes long, you know, just zip lining, but whoo, felt real good.
But then one of the most rewarding things for me about zip lines was knowing, oh man, someone is going to be pumped that I put this zip line right here.
Yep. Yeah.
And there were some times where I was like, I can't even use this zip line anymore because I'm going the opposite direction, but I'm going to put one here to make sure that the next person doesn't have to go through this bullshit that I just climbed up.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just like, who knows? Yeah. Who knows who's going to use it? I just know that somewhere someone in the ether is going to use it.
I mean, to go back to the stranding game, like that's kind of the elements from Bloodborne, Western games generally that I love, right? Like the sense that you're going to make a little mark in the world and someone else might see it and learn from it. And that could be a note that you leave in Bloodborne. It could be a death, you know, like maybe someone will see you die and realize, well, maybe I shouldn't charge headlong into that room because there's going to be mobs there or something.
Right.
You know,
right.
Or one-off jokes. Or, I mean, I think probably my favorite thing in the Soulsborne series are notes that just remind you or give you words of encouragement, you know, so you can do it or don't give up or like, yeah, you did it right. Because it feels like there's those little bits of communication when you find a, you know, zip line somewhere off way in the distance and it has a custom, you know, emote or a custom song. Mm-hmm. that's rad. Like it feels cool because I know that someone put in that little touch. You
right.
know,
they chose someone was here.
Yeah, someone was here and they put in an interaction with the game that was totally optional, you know?
Yep.
Or finding a box that someone put down, you know?
Yes.
Or, I mean, those amazing moments when, you know, out of energy, my robot legs have broken down. I find a shelter that someone yes. set up way out in the middle of nowhere. Like there's yep. two shelters in my mind in particular that were such a saving grace for me at like these really struggling moments. And like, I don't know who they are. I don't know who that person was. I gave them as many likes as I could jam onto that PS4 controller before, you know, I reached my time limit. That's the only way I can express gratitude. But
yep.
you know, I like to think that they're aware that they helped someone out like that, you know?
Oh, man. All right. So we talked a little bit about the, you know, kind of the base level mechanics, the themes of it.
Yeah. Well, and what I'll say real quick, one last thing about the mechanics.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of conversations about this game, or there certainly were then. I don't know if people are still talking about Death Stranding as much as they were, you know, when it first came out. But
well, we
whether, or not this game was fun. Mm-hmm. And I want to make it clear, I do think Death Stranding is fun. Like I totally, do enjoy yeah. the minute to minute experience of playing.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know. It's something that people have talked about this game being boring or whatever, but I think there's a lot of expectations tied up in it. And I think it's really hard to separate it from the legacy of, you know, what its marketing campaign was and who created it and all that stuff. But I think there aren't a lot of games that make you engage with the kind of granularity of environment and yeah. the granularity of your loadout and stuff. And also just the connections that you do make with other players in this weird oblique way seem pretty meaningful. And I agree. Like, I think it's a very, you know, it's not fun in the way like, oh, Saints Row is a fun game. It's rewarding right. in yep. a way that many other games are not rewarding, I feel.
Agreed.
This goes starts to get into the story, I think, but I think we can talk a little bit about like non-spoilery things around just the presentation of this game and the art behind this game, whether it's the visual art or the performances or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first off, do you have any thoughts on just like the overall aesthetic of this game? And then we can kind of go into some of the performances.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's gorgeous. Actually, you know what? If you're going to listen to one other thing about Death Stranding, I would give Tim Rogers did a spoiler-free review of Death Stranding for Kotaku that is hilarious. And he, I think, really intelligently compares it to that Tarkovsky film Stalker, where it's like a sort of post-apocalyptic, desolate. It's about like yep. three guys that go into this like irradiated area to find a MacGuffin mm-hmm. that's really weird and creepy. I get that vibe. Like it is very solitary, and I love that about that. I mean, it's not unlike Shadow of the Colossus
yes.
in its emptiness, but I do think that the presence of others, it feels as though people were there or were once there. I mm-hmm. think a lot of this game is, especially towards the end, about that work that we put in to be hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting that, aesthetically speaking, I think the way that the world is sort of, it is at once like a natural, gorgeous landscape, but it's also a scarred and alien one. Like there are moments where it feels like you're walking on Mars,
right.
or you're walking on the moon. And there are other times when it feels like you're walking through a beautiful forest.
Yes.
There are times when it feels like there's no human presence as far as the eye can see. And there are other times where as soon as you make that Cupid connection, mm-hmm. suddenly a bunch of other little things that people have established
right.
are added to the map and you can see them physically there. And it feels as though the presence of humanity is growing on the surface in like yes. a really cool way that I don't think you could accomplish without first having that more like desolate experience.
Right.
And I think in that way it works wonderfully well. Like I think those two, that line that it's choosing to walk thematically, I think you can see in the way that the world is represented.
Yeah, I completely agreed. And also I think from a practical perspective, it's super interesting to see. I mean, I think as much as we make fun of Kojima, I think this game probably was made under a fair amount of limits in terms of resourcing. Sure. You just kind of get those hints where there's actually not a huge number of characters, or there are some things where, you know, each base looks the same, which is both an artistic statement, but also that's a pretty cheap way of generating assets. I get these like little, I mean, maybe this is just from watching so much like schlocky budget TV and movies, but like I have a pretty good sense for what cost a lot and what didn't. Yep. And I feel like there are some things in this game where it's like, oh, that was a very clever way of economically doing that.
Sure.
And I think a lot of that stuff actually works very well. Like, I think those limits actually help, and it comes through stronger because the game spends its time on the things that are most relevant. Yeah. And there's a narrative justification for the fact that there's not a bunch of live NPCs walking around because, you know, half the world was decimated anyway, you know.
And there's ghosts everywhere.
And there's freaking ghosts. Yeah, there's fucking and also, ghosts by the way, we don't animate most of those ghosts. They're invisible, which is both cheap and creepy. You know, yep. I mean, that's it's just totally. Kind of an interesting, like, I don't know. There was a lot of just smart little touches that made the game look very cool, but also seemed very scalable.
Well, it also makes for some really incredible moments when, visually speaking, there are standout scenes.
Yes.
Like, there's, I think the first time that you fight Higgs, there's this just crazy monster out of the blue, and like cities rising out of an ocean of ink.
Yeah.
There's a couple of scenes at the end of the game that has like this whole little area that's like, you know, a handful of people, only people who really have basically finished the game will have seen that area. And yet it's beautifully rendered and therefore striking because you haven't seen anything like this for the last 35 hours.
Yep.
It's cool. It's really cool.
Yeah. Okay. What else should we talk? Well, I mean, I think one other thing that I will say that isn't super spoilery is that I was very impressed with the acting in this game.
Yep.
I was alternatively both impressed and cringeworthy about the writing, but I think when the writing falls down, the actors really carry it in a kind of striking way.
Yeah.
I mean, again, this is like one of the very last scenes in the game, but that Die Hardman soliloquy that he does is hands down one of the most ridiculous and also best performances I've seen in a video game ever.
Yeah, the speech at the end. Yeah, I mean, you're right. That speech is absurd. But
it's absurd,
man,
he delivers
but he
puts so much into it.
I mean, you know, you're totally right. I think hands down, you're totally right. And I said it during our, I think, Game of the Year podcast as well. But there are certain conversations, or rather, there are certain scenes with folks like Nicholas Winding Refn or Guillermo del Toro, who are creators and not traditionally actors, but who nevertheless put in very solid performances, which I think is really impressive. You know, I also think there's actors like Mads Mikkelsen or Lea Seydoux who will take clunky lines of dialogue and just act the fuck out of it.
Exactly.
And, and I mean, there are a lot of films that are nominated for Best Picture this year for the Oscars that I think are fucking trash. Mm-hmm. Maybe not a lot. Maybe there's like two movies that I think are really genuinely mediocre at best, but they're carried by performances from lead actors that are just transcendent, you know?
Yes.
And man, if you luck out in casting or directing, I guess, and if you're Kojima and you nail it and you happen to be friends with Mads Mikkelsen, ride that shit to the bank, dude. Because that guy never, you know, puts in a performance less than 100%.
Yep.
Like, genuinely, do you think Mads Mikkelsen read the larger script? Like, does he know where he fits into the narrative?
Oh, man, that's I wonder about that about all the actors, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, we'll talk about some of the actor scenes, because I think there's a, you know, you and I both really enjoyed Mama's performance. I think that one has a really interesting tie into some other stuff as well. So
it's definitely the, I mean, now that you're watching The Next Generation, I mean, there's like a Patrick Stewart aspect to many of these performances where it's like, if anyone else was saying these words, it would be ridiculous, but actually this is amazing.
For sure. 100%. I mean, what's Quiet Line is like, Fragile.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm fragile, but not that fragile. Like, that's a fucking stupid line. And honestly, most of the time it doesn't work. But there
but
are a couple
maybe
of
the sixth time they say
I mean,
it.
Yeah. There are a couple of times where she says it and you're like, man, That's true. You really are fragile, but not that fragile.
You got me.
You got me this time.
All right. So we should just declare spoilers and talk a little bit about the story here?
Yes. Spoiler alert for okay. Death Stranding, starting now.
Okay. Where do you want to start? I mean, there's just so much. This game is fucking, like, the lore of this game is pretty crazy.
Well, I mean, like, let's talk about a couple of, because I feel like there are some narrative criticisms that we should get out of the way, because otherwise I think we'll get wrapped up in, like, talking about forever stuff.
Yes.
I think that basically all the stuff with Higgs, like, I think Troy Baker does a great job, but that arc doesn't really make a lick of sense and isn't all that interesting, because it's just delaying the actual conflict of Sam and the extinction event.
Well, and the reveal around him just being a pawn of Amelie is interesting, but it would have been interesting if they moved it, like, many more hours up into the game.
Yeah. Although I gotta say, dude, the fucking fight scene that comes out of nowhere is amazing.
Wait, you mean the one where he's in a massive beast that, or like a huge like golem that he creates?
The Street Fighter one.
Oh yeah. See, I mean, that was a kind of a throwback to MGS4. They did a very similar thing.
Oh really? Okay. Deep cuts, I guess.
Well, the deep cut in MGS4 was that you are fighting Revolver Ocelot, but you're fighting him. Every time a next phase of the fight begins, they change the UI. So it starts off as PlayStation 1 UI, and then it changes to PS2 UI and 3 and so on.
Yeah, cool.
But it was a very similar thing where, like, all of a sudden it goes into, like, fucking Rock'em Sock'em Robots thing.
Well, even that scene, like, when you're in the beach and it's like, this is where a bunch of dead things collect, and there's, like, PlayStation 3s and stuff. Like, there's just, like, random shit there. They're just like, what the fuck? Like, the idea that just things like that pop up constantly in this game. Back to general criticisms.
Yes.
I still think Kojima is bringing with him some weird sexual Japanese culture stuff around Fragile in particular. And Mama too. Like, he doesn't do women especially well.
No.
Which is unfortunate. Or just, like, gender politics. I don't know. I just get that sense that he's bringing in over, like, a lot of baggage that, because he's so much of an auteur, he doesn't really run through a clean editing process. Like, I don't know. Did any women read his script and, like, give him notes? I don't know.
Right. Well, and also it's just that there's so much of, I don't know that much about him, but I know that his father died when he was pretty young. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot of weird personal stuff that I feel like he's always just trying to work through in his stuff. And it's like, maybe therapy is the right venue for this instead of publicly facing.
Yeah, he's the Lars von Trier of game directors. I think there's some, like I said on the previous podcasts, the Monster Energy drink or some of the fourth wall breaking stuff. Like, there's just some stuff that's so ridiculous. Or, there's, like, weird poop and pee humor that's just, like, not really my taste that I think is kind of dumb. The naming conventions have been called out by a lot of people. I think anyone who dislikes it is totally right, and anyone who likes it is also totally right. Like, it's okay not to like those dumb names.
I mean, I think we said this when we were talking about our games of the year, but I think your tolerance of anime and anime tropes will be highly correlated with how much you appreciate this game.
That's pretty fair. Yeah, that's fair. Shout out to Tim Rogers. He had a great quote that I had to write down when I was watching his video like a week ago. He said, if this were any more on the nose, it would be a nose, which I thought was a very accurate way of describing, especially like the names.
Right.
But you're right. Like, there is a level of humor there, and like, you know, the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure level of naming conventions that some people love and some people hate. So, you know, mileage may vary.
There's a thing where going back to the point of it being on the nose, there's an aspect of this being so on the nose that it hides in plain sight sometimes, where when Clifford Unger, the Mads Mikkelsen character, was talking about his name being Cliff. And he was saying, "Oh, I'm Cliff. I'm just an obstacle, something that you have to go around. And I was like, what? His name's, that's why his name's Cliff. I was like, how did I not see this for the last 50 hours? Of course, this is about cliffs. I've been trying to scale cliffs for the entire game.
Oh, my God. And cliffs are also my dad. What?
Right. Or like her name, or the main...
Bridget.
The president. Yeah, exactly. The president's Bridget. Yeah, it's like... Yeah. That shit hides in plain sight, and it's so stupid, but I admire it because it just takes courage to be that stupid sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, and again, like there is, and I know that I feel like I'm always on the border of giving Kojima too much credit, but I'll do it anyway. But there's a certain sense of like the narrative itself mirroring like the topology of the physical map, right? Yes. Like you have these things that are so obvious you can't miss, right?
Right.
Like enormous craters or like a city or whatever. Right. But the actual minutia of navigating that landscape, you find a lot more, literally you find more depth, you know?
Yes.
Like this game, I think my playtime total was something like 40 hours, which is not an unreasonable amount of time for any game. And in fact, it's relatively short as like, say, a JRPG goes, right?
Yeah.
But I think there's just so much density here that sometimes the on-the-nose-ness of it feels as though it's like a way to give you a sort of narrative breather before then moving on to sort of more rough and tumbly handle some of the more, delicate intricacies, you know?
Right, right. Well, and I think going back to both the intricacy and the criticism is that I think I spent roughly the same amount of time, somewhere around 50 hours or something, and I feel like I barely scratched the surface with some of the more interesting side character stuff, or even just some of the character development with Sam, where I was reading through some of the logs and it was talking about how he met his wife, and he at one point he was he was like suicidal and killed himself in front of his wife to prove to her that he was a repatriate. And like, there's all this like wild stuff that happens as text dumps that you find when you find like little items or you're just hanging out in your safe room. And it's like, so despite the fact that this game is dozens of hours, they still were not able to completely flesh out the characters and some of the more interesting aspects of it. Was a shame.
There's also so many different ways you can read the same thing, you know, like the system. What is it called? The neural network, I think it's called?
Yes, the chiral network.
The chiral network, right? Like, you can pretty easily, and the game does it very explicitly, compare the chiral network to the internet, right?
Yep.
But then all this other stuff sort of, like, falls out of that, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a quest line where you reunite a girl and her boyfriend who thought she was dead.
Oh, my God. Okay, like, side note. We talked about the best acting in video games. Some of the worst acting in video games between also, those two characters.
Yeah, not great. Okay, that stuff's a little rough. But let's take that side quest, like, at a glance, right? Like, if you were to run with this chiral network is the internet thing, you have a story where these people, like, knew each other and then didn't meet, and the internet sort of brings them back together again, you know? Yep. Or even some of the, like, weird stuff with the mules. Like, they're yes. You can basically, the game can basically be interpreted in a way as dealing with some of the repercussions of the internet today, which is it both empowers people to make bad and rash decisions. It unites us, but it also divides us. It's this dangerous tool if we don't think about how we want to control it. It's something that can be exploited.
Right.
It's something that can lead towards obsession and addiction. Like, there's all that stuff that you can carry with it. Or conversely, you could just ignore all of that. And say the chiral network is actually just a stand-in for political connections between people and making connections between ideologies or you can take it much more literally and say literally as something that binds people across great distances ideologically, you know, or empathy, you know, you could say it's like a empathic network in which in some ways like it quite literally is that in the game. Like, there's all these different ways of reading some of those same things. And so thinking about this game is this weird exercise as you're playing it of like waffling between how you want to interpret something and how you want things to mean. And then the ways that they mean relationally to one another.
Yeah. I mean, and because it goes back and forth between being so self-serious and making, you know, emoji jokes.
Yeah.
You're never quite sure how is this a serious part? Am I supposed to be, you know, treating this as a statement, or is this a goofy part and it's kind of like a satire on what I'm looking at? And I mean, maybe it's all the same thing at the same time. Like, maybe that's a valid way of looking at it. But it's just, there's so much of it. I mean, there's just so much narrative that's even just buried in the emails that you get from people. Did you read the rest of those emails from that quest line?
I read through the emails where they got divorced. Like, she left him.
So they eventually get back together.
Oh, again, after that. Okay.
Yes.
Good to know. Yeah.
So it just goes back. There's just so much stuff there. And the people that you meet along the way, the rest of the preppers that are out there. I mean, everyone is just constantly emailing you in these weird emoji-laden emails. And it's just, they all have their own little scientific, you know, treatises and their philosophical treatises. There's a bunch of, like, research and kind of data logs from Dead Man and you know, Sam's background and stuff. There's just so much to dig into. It is kind of like a weird Dark Souls feeling where, oh, there's a huge amount of lore in this sword that I picked up. I just need to read the description, but it's so easy to miss, you know? Yeah,
for sure.
Oh my goodness. All right. So that was a digression, but where were we even? We talked about Higgs. That's who we were talking about.
We talked about Higgs. Let's talk about Mama a bit, because I think that's a good transition, because I think one of the themes that I thought was most interesting to me and that I thought a lot about during the course of the game was the relationship that we have with death and dying.
Yeah.
I think Mama's questline is my favorite because I think it confronts that sort of, like, let's taking a step back, right? In terms of the actual story, right? We are existing in a world in which the idea of the afterlife is not merely philosophical.
Like, right.
We know it exists. For a fact, ghosts are 100% fucking real, you know?
Right.
You die. There's
a physical reality to death. Yeah.
Yeah, you die. You go to a beach, your own personal beach, and from there you go somewhere else. We don't know where that else is, but there's no confusion anymore.
Right.
And I think that there's a lot of sort of baggage that falls out of that, right? Like, if someone dies, you know that they've moved on, or potentially due to this, like, weird event, like, they're not moving on.
Right.
You can quite literally chase them. Like, I think Mama's storyline and Hartman's storyline sort of tie together in a really interesting way because neither of them are really able to sort of give up on loss. I know there's been some readings of Mama as, like, experiencing postpartum depression. I read it much more like someone losing their first child and, like, being unable to give up that grief. I think Sam carries that same level of grief, and I feel like even just collectively the entire world seems to be carrying a level of grief just about that severe amount of loss, and everyone's carrying all that baggage with them. I think the casting of Margaret Qualley for Mama is totally intentional because she was in The Leftovers, which is also about a sort of event where half the world disappears and everyone is just left with grief that they all have to deal with collectively. Yep. I think all of that stuff is super interesting and fills this game with a sense of melancholy that underlies everyone's motivations. Like, even people like Higgs or, you know, Amelie at the end, like, you get this sense that, like, there's just all this loss, and there's a very natural and I think a normal way of dealing with that is being insular and not confronting it and choosing to ignore, to isolate oneself in the face of tragedy. And I think, and again, there's a lot of different ways to read all the components of the game, but one of the ways that I was reading, even the ways that we were collectively helping out and the very little, you know, minute to minute mechanics of it, did connect to that larger theme of, you know, maybe a healthier way of overcoming or getting through that grief is to make connections. You know, in the case of Mama, she literally reconnects with her sister and becomes the same person, you know?
Right,
and again, super on the nose, but I think there's something super interesting about that and reading into that and the way that grief can bind people together or separate them.
Well, there's just a lot of things, even if they handle it in a, even if the game handles it somewhat in a ham-handed fashion, there's a lot of things in this game that very few games or just very few mainstream media pieces of art handle directly, period. Like, one is death, like, for sure. And not just death as in, oh, cool, Walker, Texas Ranger murdered 20 dudes this episode. I mean, like, we're talking about, like, the fallout of what it actually means to cease existence in a way that humans can comprehend and become something else,
which
is something that we just have a hard time wrapping our heads around. Kids, very few pieces of media actually engage with what it means to have a kid, what it means to lose a kid, what is the difference between, you know, being born and unborn, you know, when does a person become a person? There's very few pieces of media do stuff like that. And I think to your point, the being able to start at a, being able to level set and say, okay, here is the reality of the world. Death exists as a physical thing. There's a location to it. There are mechanics of it. You just have to go along with this. Lets you then engage with the themes in a much more free way. And there's just a bunch of actually staring at those themes, and the game doesn't really flinch. I mean, I was shocked by how many dead babies there were in this game.
Yeah.
Shocked. You know, yeah. I was, what the heck? I mean, there's, you know, dozens of ghost babies that all were dead, or babies that were taken from comatose mothers. And I mean, that's shit that Rockstar doesn't even touch. And they have pretty grim games, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even the stuff with Cliff and the sort of collective trauma of war.
Yes.
You know, is heady stuff. And that's stuff that Metal Gear has been trading in for a very long time.
Right.
But again, like, he doesn't leave anything on the table, you know, like the sequence with Vietnam and World War One or World War Two and how it ties to Cliff stuff, like, that's super cool.
And I think just exploring that stuff in an unflinching way, for me, even if I didn't agree with some of the implications or conclusions, some of that stuff, it was just really refreshing to explore those themes so explicitly in a game where it is taking a stance on how people feel and, you know, what might be the right or wrong way, you know, to handle situations. And also just the sheer, just making it uncomfortable. I mean, hearing a baby cry is just this visceral thing that you just want it to stop. And you spend a fair amount, you spend a fair amount of this game trying to soothe a child that you are pretty sure. I mean, even from early on, it's pretty clear that this child had gone through some sort of trauma and maybe couldn't even survive outside of this little bubble. So you're like, well, this thing has an expiration date on it anyway. Am I just abusing it, but also kind of comforting it at the same time? Like, there's a bunch of uncomfortable shit in this game that the game doesn't let you turn away from because it's literally attached to your player character.
Well, and again, like, of Sam, like, literally, I mean... at the end of the game, when it's revealed that, you know, he starts calling BB Lou, and that the name he gave to his stillborn daughter was Louisa, like, you start to see that, like, he's if you want to read it that way, again, he's literally carrying a burden of his grief throughout the entire game and nurturing it when he should be giving it up, you know?
Exactly.
It's fucking wild, dude. Yeah. This game is so wild. And then, you know, I think that last piece of the story when he's trekking to go burn his BB is, I thought, was super emotionally effective.
Oh my god, the soundtrack of that part, I mean, it's so cheesy too. It's so cheesy, but I loved it.
Yep absolutely.
We didn't, so I think the mama stuff was great. I mean, I think everything from just the weird trauma of birth to the weird connection that mothers and children have just inherently and physically was all super interesting. The weapon that you get out of that, I mean, it's hard to think of a more kind of gross and savage weapon than, like, just
cutting umbilical cords. Man, that weapon saved my ass, though.
I mean, I used it all the time. I just thought that stuff was all very good. How about who else didn't we talk? Oh, we didn't talk about Hartman yet.
Oh, yeah, Hartman. I mean, again, I saw Hartman's story very much in relationship with Mama's, you know, because he's also chasing after his dead wife and child, you know.
Yep.
And the idea
knowing
of, like,
that they somehow exist, it's like it's almost somehow worse that we now know that death is a place, because it gives us the illusion that we could go there.
And this idea of going quite literally back and forth between, I mean, basically, like, you could read that as bouts of depression or pursuing something that, like, you know, is also hopeful, you know, but, like, he's literally waffling between getting his fucking job done. You know, like he works in 5 minute, I think it's 5 minutes, right? Like five minute intervals.
It's a little bit longer. It's like 20 and it's some weird interval, but it's like, it's, you know, 20 minutes or something like
that.
Well,
it's pretty quick because I think at one point there's like a cut, there's a cut scene where you're meeting.
Yeah, it happens in real time during a cut scene.
And there's a countdown to the next time, right? And like this weight of that, right? Of him, but then also getting his fucking job done and then being like, be right back. I have to chase my dead wife and daughter. All right, now I'm back. Let's get back down to business. I don't know. It's just really evocative, I thought. Yeah. I thought that was really neat. I love the way that all of the characters come back towards the end, and it's super cheesy, but the sort of speech that they give to Sam about like there being connections with each other. It was that moment, and then especially the very last scenes with Sam on the beach with Amelie and the world extinction potentially happening, that to me evoked Neon Genesis Evangelion and the way that Shinji, you know, has these connections with these people that remind him that the world is worth fighting for, despite that it's also this struggle. Like, I don't know. That felt to me very much on the nose, like a very, very obvious tie-in. But
yes,
Well,
and also that there's, I think, going back to a previous point that we were making, the end of this game is not a solution. It's kicking the can down the road in hopes that you can find a solution. And Amelie's whole thing, which I thought was, again, I thought it was interesting, they just handled it in a really narratively weird way, where she came to the conclusion that she was going to be the trigger for this event, so might as well get it over with. But the whole point of the story is, even if you are this extinction event, the struggle to potentially stave this off is worth it. Even if we know we may fail, or maybe even probably will fail, the whole point is to continue struggling and doing it, which it ties into a lot of other media like that, where, you know, in Evangelion, are we even supposed to be to survive these angel attacks? I mean, there's a question to that. And I thought that stuff was pretty good, and it made me feel like I understood the characters much more. I wish it had just come a little bit earlier in the game, you know? I
mean, the idea that even like Amelie is essentially trying to take a shortcut. You know, like she's not willing to put in the work. It's just like another weird, like, I don't know if that's intentional, but seems to make narrative cohesion between, you know, the rest of the experience. And I like the idea that, you know, that, I mean, again, if you wanted, as I did, to read a little bit more about like death and whether or not it's worth it, it's like, look, we all know we're going to die one day, you know, but like, is it worth it to struggle and make those connections with each other anyway? I think the scene that really brought everything together was the scene where you're forced to go all the way back to the beginning from the end. With no help. Like, there's no fast travel. You got to walk it yourself.
Right.
There's no, like, you can't find, I don't think you can find any of the, there's not like cars and stuff, right? I mean, I guess you could use other people's stuff.
That was a powerful moment for me because I brought up my map and I found a path, and I was just hoping, I was like, if I can get to the road, then hopefully other people have built it out enough that I can get back. And lo and behold, it was. And I was like, yes, humanity is good.
Yes, exactly. Like it is so triumphant, and you see, and you're forced to see all the progress that you've made, which like also again goes, you know, if you want to read the story about depression, about like putting in the day-to-day work, and like the world gets better through you get better through the sort of minor things that you think are unimportant, but actually contribute towards progress, and a collective progress at that. It's feeling like other people have your back, feeling like it was worth it, reminding yourself of like, oh yeah, I remember when I was here and I built this road and I contributed towards this and I made a connection to other people and the environment. It feels so gratifying, but like both self-gratifying and collectively gratifying, and I think totally fits in to that idea of like, even though it can feel like a drag, even though this entire video game is very literally a fetch quest, it is worth it, you know, within this larger theme of things, like you are building towards something here and taking that audacious step towards putting in the work and contributing toward it, like is important and is a very human thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's in a world that's completely desolate, you're just, you are making those connections, whether it's the in-game characters or the other people that are going through this journey, and that's the thing that propels you back to the start, and that's the thing that propels you to the end of the game. That is, I mean, ultimately it is a hopeful thing, even though there is there's this clock, you know, something is going to happen to humans eventually. It's just that we can make the best of what's going on now if we choose to take ownership over it.
Yep, exactly.
And that stuff was, it was just great. It was, I mean, and don't get me wrong, it's a pain in the ass every step of the way. Like, getting back to that road was harrowing because you don't have anything. Yeah.
There's those weird, like, new balloon monsters and stuff.
Yeah, it's just everything is unpleasant and off, and, you know, your boots are getting destroyed, and just everything is just terrible. And then you make it, and you see a broken down old Jeep that someone left, and you're like, thank you.
Yep. Yeah, and man, like, even driving that Jeep, like, I think at one point I drove a Jeep, like, and I almost got taken by BTs because it's like, I hadn't been there in a long time. I forgot that was where they were, yep, like, you know, hanging out or whatever. Yep. Kicking back with their cold ones, like,
they're monsters.
Yeah, like, there was a moment that triggered a boss fight very close to near the end of, I guess they're probably scripted, but very near the end towards getting back to the original destination, where the three,
was it the whale?
It was first the whale, and then it was the hounds, like the massive dogs. And at one point, yep, three of them show up, and yep, you have to fight off three, and it's this long, now I know which whale you're talking about, the massive whale.
Yes. Yeah.
Man, what a fucking amazing sequence that is.
Yeah.
God, I love that shit so much. But, like,
it's also just so disturbing too. Like, there's so many weird primal disturbing things where, like, this just makes, there's something in my lizard brain that is deeply repulsed by whatever is going on here.
I mean, again, like, even going to the environmentalist shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, to see this juxtaposition between something that looks very much like crude oil, but also something that's covered with, you know, literally covered in gold. Like, yeah, come on. super cool. But, I mean, at one point, like, I had to abandon a vehicle because the battery, yes, ran out. But the battery, mm-hmm, like, when I found the car, it was someone else's car. The battery was already low. But, like, it got me just that much further, you, yes, know? And I abandoned it, and I was like, you know what? Thanks, bud. Like, you carried me a little bit of the way, but I got to take it from here, you know? Like, it feels like fucking Lord of the Rings out of nowhere, do you know?
Yes.
And, like, yeah, the rest of the world is Samwise, and I'm Frodo, you know? Like, it's a very, very cool moment that I think really hits those themes so well together. And I think it's perfectly situated. Like, the idea of having to backtrack the entire thing sounds so daunting. Like, if I, yes, were to tell you that before you got through this game, you'd be totally like, I don't want to fucking, off, yeah, fuck, yeah, I don't want to fucking do that.
Yeah.
You know, but, man, towards the end, when, like, you are actually putting in the work and you know how much of a gruel it is, and it's calling back, yep, to your first experiences in the game, which are admittedly slow and confusing, and you don't have, yep, any of, like, the power-ups, but, you know, you persevere anyway. Like, it's just, it's so resonant with itself that, yes, is very, very satisfying to have something like that come up so late in the game.
Yeah. Man. Oh. All right. Anything else before we kind of wrap things up?
You know, I feel like I'm constantly going back to this idea of this game not being good for some people. Like, they just don't like it,
yeah,
or they don't want to, yeah, play it. And, like, there's very few games, I guess maybe Bloodborne and the Souls. Well, no, maybe that's a bad example. There's very few games that I actually do genuinely believe. Because most of the time, look, I'm going to be honest. If I think a game is good, I think people should play it. And if I think a game, yeah, is bad, I don't think people should play it.
Yeah.
This is actually one of those weird games where I do think that if it's not to your liking, it's totally fine not playing it.
Yeah.
Even though I think, yeah, it does stuff that no other video game does. And it's amazing and,
yep,
great, and we'll think about it for years to come. And it's super dense and always interesting. Also problematic, but, like, there's just so much there to think about. You,
yes,
almost want to go, like, you need to read this. You need to read this, right? But it's like, I don't know. Maybe it's something like, I don't know. I just can't find a real world example. You know, maybe,
yeah,
like Infinite Jest or something,
yeah,
where it's like, yeah, although I'm convinced no one's actually read Infinite Jest. That's not a real book. But the way that people talk about that, right, is like it can be this transcendent narrative experience, but it's also daunting and it's big. Or like Finnegan's Wake, you know,
mm-hmm,
I do believe that there's probably something there that makes it a masterpiece, but if it's not for you or you don't have the time, like, fine, don't do it. And I don't know, it's, I feel like that is a weird place for me to end it, but I do think it's true.
I mean, this game, it actually reminds me a lot of the types of things that we would talk about in the very, very early days of when we started doing the podcast and started writing about video games. And this game feels like one of those games where this is a challenging game from a thematic perspective and a difficult game from both a mechanic and a thematic perspective, to just because it's not necessarily pleasant at all times to play. And the themes are pretty just different from the run of the mill thing. And so I agree with you that I don't hold it against anyone for saying this game is not even close to enjoyable, but I would still argue that it's important, and you probably would get something out of it if you, you know, if you engaged with the themes. I feel about this game, and just I think Kojima in general, in the way that I feel about the Wachowskis a lot, where I love the Wachowskis.
Oh, yeah,
I completely understand why people do not like their movies.
Yeah.
Or like Sense8 was one of my favorite Netflix shows ever. I mean, rest in peace, Sense8. You were taken from us too soon. But
yeah, legit, like that's probably the best comparison to Death Sea, because that's also incredibly on the nose sometimes.
It's also
about like the superpower is collective empathy and working towards a greater good. Like 100%, Sense8 is a masterpiece. But you're
Sense8, a Strand show.
Sure.
I mean, but I wouldn't blame anyone for just being completely put off or weirded out by that, or just rolling their eyes at it, because it is, like most of their stuff, it is kind of on the nose. But it says something about the human condition. It says something. It also says something because they have very explicit rules about how their universe and the various superpowers work. There's a very kind of practical level to it. And I think that's, to me, that's freeing. You know, it's cool to see people take those big swings, even if it makes you look a little bit silly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Kojima does, you know, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. I like that comparison a lot, especially because Sense8 never stops being super Wachowski.
Yes-ish,
you know, like there's what I think three seasons and a movie of Sense8, and
a Christmas special.
I mean, even the movie, like, man, it is peak Wachowski nonstop throughout the whole thing, and I love it for it. I love that it's unabashedly so. In the same way that I think I'm just, you're right, I'm a fan that this is the Kojima-ist game Hideo Kojima has ever put together.
I hope that this was cathartic for him.
Sure.
Because it seems like he really had a go of it by the end of the time at Konami. And people are always kind of questioning, well, does all he do is Metal Gear? Is everything just Metal Gear for him? Even though he has had, you know, Zone of the Enders and Police Knots and all that stuff. But this was such a departure from that stuff. And I think it was cool to see something like this, him come out on the other side with a game that I felt it was probably, I would argue that this or Metal Gear Solid 4 is probably his strongest game. And it makes me hopeful for, okay, he's exercised some of these demons. It seems like he can stand on his own 2 feet at Kojima Productions, and you will have this kind of auteur force continue on for at least, you know, a couple more games. Whereas if this fails, it's like, who knows, maybe he goes and does indie games or what have you. But I think there is a place for games that take big sweeping experimental swings at a level of scale that this game does it. And I think the industry is better for it, even if it's not, you know, it's not gonna sell Red Dead 2 type numbers, you know.
Do you think Kojima is capable of making a small-scale game? Because, I mean, this feels like such a... It's like he's just vomiting out ideas, you know? It's like he stayed up really late one night. It's like a scene out of a movie in, like, the 18th century where he's got, like, 50 candles and he's just, like, nonstop scribbling with his pen. His hands are covered in ink and he's, like, bleeding. And, like, he just cannot stop putting ideas down. And I wonder, like, what would it look like to get... a game of his that is smaller scale, that is edited down, you know, that is literally 10 hours, you know, like what would that look like? I don't know if he's capable of doing something like that, you know.
They should, I signed up for the pre-release news of that new Playdate console that is supposed to come out this year. Yeah, you know, it would be so cool if he would do something like that, like make tiny games, you know, WarioWare style games, just to see what that looks like.
It somehow would still be about everything.
This tiny little black and white 8-bit game is about, you know, late stage capitalism. Here you go, turn the crank.
Yeah, man. Hey, if anyone's gonna do it, Kojima.
All right. Well, that was cathartic. We had been talking about doing this debrief for a couple months, but then all of a sudden the end of the year stuff happened, so things got all crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's still so much to think about and talk about in this game. I didn't talk about the moon. I wanted to talk about the moon a little bit, but whatever. We'll save that for another time.
This will be one of those games kind of like Chrono Trigger or Dark Souls or what have you. I mean, I think this, for a certain nerdy subsection of video gamedom that we are definitely in, I think this will become a reference game in the same way that Shadow of the Colossus is a reference game. And I think that is probably, for someone like Kojima, I think that's probably the highest compliment you could pay him, in that this has now become a reference game for us in the kind of weirder circles of the you know, video game internet.
We're also seeing that, unironically, folks are using the word strand game, which I never would have predicted, because I was certainly using it ironically at first, but now some people are like, oh, that's a strand game. Yeah, it is. So there we have it.
I mean, the turnaround time from introducing that phrase to people making fun of it to then people reclaiming it has just been wild. I mean, it took Walking Simulator like a decade to be reclaimed.
Exactly. I'm willing to put money on it right now. We'll still be using the word strand game in like 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
I bet we'll be using it the next time Kojima comes out with a game.
Yeah.
Which will probably be 10 years. We'll have to ask him.
Yeah, exactly. Is this a strand game, Kojima? All right. Let's leave it there for now. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our shipping center. Come on down. We got episodes for you to carry to your ears.
Pile them high on your backpack.
Yeah, you can find them wherever fine podcasts are sold. Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes. We're all everywhere around the internet. Give us a review. Let us know your thoughts. Send us an email. Reach out.
Cool. All right, everyone. Until next time, thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Your time.